And our second scripture reading today is Isaiah 35, 4 through 7a. Isaiah 35. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear, your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution, he will come to save you. Then the eyes of the blind will be opened, and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then will the lame leap like a deer, and the mute tongue shout for joy. Water will gush forth in the wilderness, and streams in the desert. The burning sand will become a pool, the thirsty ground, bubbling springs. We'll call now on Keith to bring us the message.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to be back in New York. It is. You can believe me when I say that. It's great to be here this morning and have an opening from the Walking Roots Band. Everything's going to be fine after that. That song, Longing for Light, it brings back a lot of memories for us. That was a theme of one of our dinner theaters out in Iowa. I've always loved that song. You did a fine job singing it. Great to have some folks connected to the Carthage football team here this morning. You had a great season up there for the Advent candle, and there's a lot of football in the newspaper this morning. I haven't read it yet because our newspaper boy didn't wrap it in plastic, and it sat on the porch and got soaked, so I'm letting it dry out. But a lot of football news from Lowville and Carthage. It's been quite an interesting season for us here in northern New York. This is an important text. I only had Brian read the middle of it, but the entire chapter is really going to be our focus this morning. Isaiah is always quoted during the Advent season more than any other prophet, more than any other book. And part of it's because when we look back with 2020 hindsight, we can see how Isaiah was mapping out this whole scenario of how Christ would come and what that would mean. And in fact, from this reading this morning, there is an important piece from George Frederick Handel's Messiah. Numbers 12 through 18 tell the story of the birth of Christ. For unto us a child is born, and then it moves right through, word for word, how the scripture says it. If you want to hear that sung, you can go to Trinity Episcopal Church next Sunday. It's going to be the entire performance. The entire script is going to be performed that day. It's a pretty rare thing that happens here in the North Country. Right after that comes number 19, which is these verses out of Isaiah chapter 35. The eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf unstopped, the lame shall leap like a deer, the tongue of the speechless sing for joy. That's exactly how the words go, right after this part where Christ was born in George Frederick Handel's version of the Messiah. Now, this seems to be a word out of place. This is a positive thing to hear this morning from Isaiah 35. But in Isaiah 34, it's not positive at all. In fact, it's a little bit morbid. Verses 7 and 8 especially talks about the land being soaked with blood. The soil is made rich with fat. The Lord has a day of vengeance, a year of vindication, and just all kinds of bad things happening in Isaiah chapter 34. And then with no explanation or warning at all, it turns. And we get this positive picture in Isaiah 35, given to people whose lives probably weren't very positive at that time. It's a pretty good guess they were living in captivity. This seems to be a word out of place. Where does it come from? There could be two responses to Isaiah chapter 35, especially looking back now after the birth of Christ. One is that these days are here now, that Isaiah is writing about, chapter 35, they're here right now. The other response is, no, we're nowhere near that. Those days are yet to come. Which is it going to be? A lot of it has to do, I think, with what we accomplished today, is what is our attitude going in? Connie and I were in Florida for the last few days. We had a successful trip down there. I visited someone for a fundraising effort on the endowment fund for Beaver Camp and got a pretty good contribution pledged over the next 5 years. And of course, I have to shamelessly mention that with 16 days left in the year, you too can still make your contribution to that fund if you'd like. I have all the information. But it was the trip was timed good for us, except I did the very thing that drives me crazy when I'm sitting up here in northern New York. You put on your Facebook page or social media or talk to somebody and you just mention, you know, it's 20 below up here and the snow's blowing. Yeah, isn't it something else? And somebody always chimes in, well, it's 80 degrees and sunny where I am. Doesn't that make you feel a lot better? So I always said, I'm not going to do that. Well, wouldn't you know, somebody called me while I was down there, 72 degrees, sunny, beautiful, and they needed to buy a heater for a room at Maple Ridge because it was getting so cold in that room, and rather than turn the heat up in the whole building, let's just heat that room. And I said, well, what do you need a heater for? It's 72 degrees where I'm standing. I did the same thing. Something happens in our brains when we're in that situation. I think we just want people to know how good we have it, I guess. At the same time, when you were getting your storm here, again, Connie and I were saying, oh, we're missing that. We should be there, because that's what Christmas is. Watching people walk around in Santa Claus hats and shorts just doesn't do anything for me. It didn't seem right. But it was a good time to visit my stepbrother, John Lapp, who works for Mennonite Mission Network. They had their meetings there and got to see him for a day. I got to visit Cal and Margaret Beachy again. They are important sources for me in my Beaver Camp history project. Margaret said something, said, you got to be careful around here this time of year. The Amish come down here every year, and they ride their bikes all over the place, and they don't look when they cross the street, so you be careful. And I laughed because Bernadine Schwarzentruber had said something just like that when we had them over for dinner a few weeks ago. Bernadine reads the budget, and she says, what happens in Florida with the Amish is a little different than what happens when they live up here. So I mentioned that to Margaret, and I had forgotten that Cal knows the Schwarzentrubers. He said, Bernadine, is that Nelson's wife? I said, yeah. Nelson worked for Cal the very first year at camp. And then Cal said it again. He was a nice guy. That's the second time he said that about Nelson. I'm going to start believing him one of these days. So that was a good visit. And then out of nowhere, my cousin Joel from San Diego, California, and his wife, we're visiting my Aunt Joanne and Ron Fry, who lived down there, and we didn't even know we were going to be there at the same time. So we had a nice gathering. Now, Joel's wife is not a cold weather person, and Joel wants to get her up here to visit. And so she asked me, when is it warm up there? And I said, well, it's always a question when the two warm days of the year are going to be. We never know, but it's usually in July or August sometime. But I told her, come up in February and come to the tubing hill and have a positive attitude doing it, and you're going to have a good time, because I'm remembering people just like her age, in fact. Last year, on one of the coldest nights of the year, the hill was super fast, and people were timing on their cell phones how fast they were going, whatever satellite does that, 44 miles an hour, that's faster than you can legally drive through town. And one of the girls, who kind of looked like Joel's wife, said, this is so much fun. And she was jumping up and down like a little kid. So our attitude going into something makes a big difference. And it certainly makes a big difference here with Isaiah chapter 35. Now, the other thing that happened while I was down there, and I had no idea this was happening, all of a sudden I read in the on a post that somebody put that there was a bluegrass day at Honeymoon Island, which is in Dunedin, Florida, about an hour and a half north of where we were. So I quick jumped in the car and drove up there and saw these guys that, anybody recognize them? They've played here in church twice, and here they were at Honeymoon Island in Florida. So don't they look comfortable? This was just a week ago, last Saturday. Ever since they've played, thanks Brian for putting that up, ever since they've played in church here, whenever they see me, it's like a homecoming. They all come running over and shake my hand, and this is still one of their best memories, playing in church here for you all. But what really got my attention, what gave me attention, I wore this shirt to that festival. On my way walking into the festival, first guy I see coming down the path, who signed your shirt? I bought this at a thrift store. It was Phil Hansen, by the way. Heather would know who that is. You can ask her. And I don't know who Ashley is. It says to Ashley. I have no idea who that is. Reminds me of the woman who was going through her clothes and they weren't very good anymore, and she said, I'm just going to give these to a thrift store. And her husband said, oh, just throw them out. Those clothes aren't any good for anybody anymore. And she said, no, there are starving people in the world that could use these clothes. And he said, anybody who fits into those clothes is definitely not starving. I'm thinking of visiting him in the hospital. He took a punch to the face. So that was the first thing. Then I'm walking around in the audience area, and I hear this voice, go Buffalo! Where's that coming from? Pretty soon it was again, go Buffalo! In the same way that Bills fans do. It was the guy selling hamburgers at the concession stand. Used to live in Buffalo, now lives down there. And he held up the can of whatever it was he was drinking, and it had a Buffalo Bills can cooler around it. So, well, we had a nice gathering there. It was barely 2 minutes later. And another guy, hey, did you used to live up there? I used to live in Rochester. We like that team. Here we are again. And then he said, my wife tells me that the only reason I wear my Bills shirt in public is so other people from Buffalo will recognize it. And I said, well, you tell her it works. And he said, well, she's coming this way right now. You tell her. So I jumped in front of her. This really works, doesn't it? And we got a good laugh out of that. So I thought, I know what I'm going to do. When I go back to New York, I'm going to wear this shirt to church. See what their reaction is there. First person who saw me, what are you wearing that for? Don't you know this is church on Sunday morning? And then a kid comes up to me, stands in front of me, points at my shirt and goes like that. The welcome in South Florida is a lot warmer than it is here in northern New York. But regardless, our attitude going in makes a difference. We were in Venice for the day. Venice is a sleepy town about 15 miles south of Sarasota. There is a saying that, you know, all those old people who live in Sarasota, their parents live in Venice. There's some truth in that. The Bills were playing the Baltimore Ravens that day. It was a big game. It wasn't on TV anywhere, but it was on in this sports bar. So we were going to go in there and watch it. And my attitude going in was, if they're behind by 10 points or more, I'm not staying there because there's no way they're coming back. That was my attitude going in. So we went in and sat down. Well, they were behind by 8, 17-9. I said, that's enough. This team is not going to come back from that. So we sat there for about 20 minutes, and nobody ever did come and wait on us, probably because I was wearing this. And so we actually got up and left, and I didn't even bother to watch the game. Well, I guess it did get pretty close. They lost, but I guess it was kind of exciting, and they had a couple plays right at the end where if they could have gotten in, it would have tied the game. But my attitude was, this is not going to work, and it didn't. And that just makes a difference. So I think about that with Isaiah chapter 35. This chapter has more to do with more than just positive thinking. There's a deeper truth here. Basically, what I'm seeing in Isaiah chapter 35 is to expect God's response, that God is here right now and is working to make things right. You believe that? Or does that seem like a word out of place? The text, as we move through it in verses 1 and 2, we read about a wasteland that turns into a garden. And in verses 3 and 4, we read about the weak who suddenly become strong. And then in verses 5 and 6, we read about the lame who are suddenly leaping. We sang that song at Beaver Camp so many years ago, walking and leaping and praising God. And then in verses 6 and 7, there's a drought that suddenly turns into a delta, similar to the photos that the kids saw. And then in verses 8 through 10, there's a wilderness that turns into a great highway. Do you believe that that is the time in which we are living? And depending on your outlook on our society today, you may not believe that. But a lot of it is how we see our calling as Christians in the world. And what's interesting to me is this chapter follows a pattern that's pretty common with some of the poetry that's in the Old Testament. It starts in one place, moves to another place, gets to this point, and then goes back and talks about those other two places again. So there's like an A, B, C, B, A pattern in the poetry. In Isaiah chapter 35, it talks about creation first, the plants and the animals. And then it moves to people, and then it moves to God. And then it moves back to people and finishes up at the end of the chapter with creation again. It's kind of a neat symmetry for how these poems work. Well, the way to interpret the true meaning then behind a chapter like this is that middle portion. That's where the truth of the matter lies, and in the book of Isaiah, it is in verses 4b. Here is your God, Isaiah 35. Here is your God. He will come. He will come and save you. Now, do you believe that? Or does that seem like a word out of place? There's a second thought here, and this is what I wish to leave you with this morning. We can sit back and wait for God to make these things happen and wonder when it's going to come, because we're not seeing a whole lot of progress in the 2,000 years since Jesus was born. Or we can acknowledge that God chose to come to the world in the form of a human being to teach us how to live, and that we will play a part in bringing about this part of Isaiah chapter 35. The presence of Christ and the guidance of the Holy Spirit in our lives grants us the power to change the world. This is where I appreciate the, for lack of better words, the older generation in our congregation who have seen so much change and perhaps are not always encouraged by what they've seen in the church, but they've stayed with us. They've been here. They've acknowledged there's change, and they see the positive in our gathering. And I'm encouraged by the younger generation who apparently feel like they can do anything. We can accomplish great things, just need to put our minds to it. Put the older and the younger together and put the Spirit of God into that, and we have a powerful situation here today. We can be signs of the kingdom for those who are watching and waiting. So that is my encouragement and challenge this morning. May God, may people be able to see in you the works of God in your life, and may that be the evidence this Christmas season of what's happening in Isaiah chapter 35.